All right, so the name of this one is Righting, R-I-G-H-T-I-N-G. This is actually today's meditation out of one of my meditation books called 365 Tao. A deviation of a hair's breadth at the center leads to an error of 100 miles at the rim. When the effort is so slight, why should you hesitate to set things right? There are many people who endeavor to know spirit. In the greatest sincerity, they take music lessons, read scripture, learn foreign languages, study nutrition, change their dress, go to temples, all in the hopes that they will reach spirit. Sadly, they miss it by a hair's breadth. For a person to awaken to spirit, someone must give them a spark. Perhaps this is what is called direct transmission. It is odd, but this is the only way that knowledge of spirit is passed on. Book knowledge cannot help and give one deep theoretical background, but the true understanding of spirit still comes person to person. There is no other way. So if you have a true understanding of spirit, you got it from someone. If you meet someone else who needs that spark and you are in the position to give it, then do so. Don't be selfish. There are so many people out there who want guidance and who cannot get it. If you can make a difference for at least one person, then you have a tremendous merit indeed. Meditation. Prayer.
God, please lay aside everything I think I know about this weekend. A big book, alcoholism, addiction, 12 steps, myself, and especially you, God, so I may have an open mind and new experience. Help me see the truth. Amen.
So, what I read to you, this little meditation, what we'll usually do is we'll read something, we'll do the 2-minute meditation, we'll say the prayer, and then we'll give you our interpretation of what we read to you in this moment, like what it, because I could read it tomorrow and it could mean something different. But what it says to me is that all of the stuff that you're doing here, all the exercises, all the notes you're taking, all that is great. It's a start. It gives you tons of knowledge. But unless you actually engage some sort of spiritual guide, a sponsor, the information that we're giving you is worthless. And then once you gain that experience of working the steps, you can then transmit that to somebody else if they need it. Now, I'll also tell you that what you'll get a lot out of us is you'll get stories of current and past experience out of where we're at on different stuff. And one of the things that, because I find them entertaining and because I think that they're actually quite applicable in life, is I'll share some of this. I live on a small little farm, and we've got chickens and pigs and goats. And there's a lot of things that I observe from the chickens and pigs and goats that I apply to my life, and I apply to sponsorship, and I apply to spirit world. Now, one of the things that I've learned, because we actually do hatch out some chicks, is that roosters are pretty much worthless. They serve really two functions. Is they impregnate the women, and they protect the flock from predators. That's pretty much it. And aside from that, you know, you can eat them, but really they don't have a ton of value. Now, the roosters are incredibly selfless in the way that they go about. When they find some food, they have a very distinct call that they give to all the hens, and the hens all come gathering around, and then he lets all the hens eat first, and then he starts to eat after the others are fed. Now, this story may come back into play, but why it's important to me today is there are some hens that take their time to get to the food. And maybe by the time they get there, it's all gone. But the other thing that sometimes happens is, because I live out in the middle of nowhere, there's wild boar. I think there might be some wild cats. There's definitely foxes, probably coyotes, all sorts of other birds of prey. And the hens that stay close to the rooster, it's actually fascinating. The roosters actually have larger eyes than the hens. And if you watch them, they will spend most of their day just kind of looking around. And if you get a particular frisky rooster, when you walk by, he'll come after the back of your legs. They never really attack you straight on. It's kind of weird. It's kind of like chicken shit. They come at you from the side and kind of get you. So the hens that hang out the furthest away from the rooster that's meant to protect them are usually the ones that get picked off by the predators. Bright daylight, just middle of the day. So, for those of you that like analogies, for those of you that like to hang out around the fringe, for those of you that like to spend time at the back, on the outsides, and don't get engaged and immersed where the source of the food is, closest to the rooster, drugs and alcohol generally will pick you off. If you see me in any meeting, anywhere on this planet, you will usually find me sitting somewhere about right here, in every meeting, closest to the source. So watch your actions, watch what you do. Those of you that enjoy being on the outskirts, enjoy being in the back, enjoy being away from the action, chances are you're picked off first.
Thanks, Brandon. I'm Tarek. I'm an addict alcoholic. Everyone familiar with this symbol? Can everyone see this up on the screen? Circle and triangle. This symbol, I guess a lot of people may think it has something to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. It did at one point. Because of some copyright issues and AA's AA was not interested in going into court to fight for it. It was removed from any AA literature 1994, 1995. But the symbol has been around way before Alcoholics Anonymous. It's an ancient spiritual symbol. It means mind, body, and spirit together as one. It's also your roadmap. It's also your compass. So when I sponsor men through the 12 steps, bear with me 1 second, please.
Here it goes.
It might be. There you go. Thanks, boy. So, when I sponsor men through the steps, not every time I meet with them, but as I get them through the steps and they're making amends and I'm showing them how to start practicing 10, 11, and 12, I'll meet with them and I ask them to locate themselves using the circle and the triangle. And what that means is I want to know what's going on in their recovery, what's going on in their unity, and what's going on in their service. So what happens when you come into Alcoholics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, Heroin Anonymous, and those fellowships all use the big book, your mind has to go through a recovery process. The big book says insanity is the lack of proportion and the lack of the ability to think straight. It's the best definition of insanity that I have come across. So what happens is when you take your mind into the recovery process that's in the first 11 steps, whether you like it or not, aspects of your thinking are going to begin to change. It's a default, it's a byproduct of working the steps. And it tends to solve this problem of not having proportion and the ability to think straight. Now, that core problem of insanity has layers to it. But the first thing that gets removed somewhere in the step process, and sometimes if your first step surrender is so powerful, the obsession gets ripped away right then and there before even working a step. But for most people, somewhere in the step process, they wake up and realize they haven't thought about getting high or taking a drink. And the first layer of insanity is removed. But if your experience is anything like my experience, you'll start to lack proportion and the ability to think straight in other areas. And then you'll begin to struggle, and you'll begin to go through what we call evolution and change and movement. It's just part of life. It's also part of the spiritual path, in my opinion. So take the mind into the recovery process, first 11 steps specifically. Well, the body we equate to unity. You take your body to a meeting, to the fellowship. The first layer of healing that I most likely experienced was that when I first started going to meetings and I heard someone tell part of my story and I said, holy shit, I'm not the only one that's been through something like that. And on some level, something in me began to heal because I was no longer isolated in that way. But when I sponsor someone, I take this idea of unity much deeper than just going to meetings. So if you guys want to be successful in recovery, which I'm hoping there's a sliver of a desire to do that, you're going to have to get a home group. You're going to have to go to group conscience on a regular basis. It would probably be a good idea to get a job at your group, to be of service to your group, and if all the service positions are taken, you can give yourself a job. I'm going to show up 45 minutes early every week and just go around and talk to people. I'm going to set up some chairs. You don't need to be assigned that job to help. And you start doing it every week. It's what I did at my first real home group. I started setting up chairs. It was a big meeting. And I did it for 2 years. Friday night, 150 chairs. That was me. Eventually, sponsees were doing it with me. So we got a home group, we get a group conscience, we get a job at our group. Let's go a little bit deeper. Developing relationships with other men that are like-minded, that's the key word here, like-minded in their approach to recovery. You know, you got to know who your immediate family is and who your kissing cousins are, right? Because your mind will put you into delusion. Let's say you're hanging out with some guys that maybe they didn't run as hard as you did, right? Or maybe they did run as hard as you did, but for whatever reason, they don't have to work the steps the way they're outlined in the book.
Maybe they're the guys that are with you right now, and when you check their stories against yours, they ain't got what you got. Mm. You know, maybe they got a little, there's a little heat on them, and that's why they're here. Maybe didn't look like anybody, but usually there's a kid in here whose parents caught him smoking pot, and they sent him to a place like this. Those are the ones that's like, oh wow, you are so not an addict, but you're stuck in this room. But so are the guys that you're talking to here. Were they mad dogs, or were they just kind of like, you know, trying it out?
So, I'm hanging out with Joe. Joe goes through the steps. Joe makes a few amends. Joe dabbles in some prayer. Doesn't do any meditation. Doesn't really develop an accountability network. And Joe sponsors when it's convenient for him.
He raises his hand in meetings.
He hands his phone number out. He raises his hand.
Signs the sheets.
So, Joe doesn't suffer from restlessness and irritability and discontent to the extent that I do. But I hang out with Joe all the time. And my sponsor's on my ass. He's like, I got to make all my amends. He's like, I need you to develop a network with 3 to 4 guys. I need you praying and meditating every day. And I need you tackling the newcomers after the Lord's Prayer. And I'm hanging out with Joe one Friday night. I'm like, dude, my sponsor's telling me to do all this stuff. And your sponsor doesn't tell you to do any of that stuff. You know what? Fuck my sponsor. I'm going to do what you do. And then I get high. So maybe people suffer from the internal condition that leads us back to that first drink or drug to different degrees. I tend to spend a lot of time hanging out with people that have similar struggles, that we are very like-minded in our endeavor to grow spiritually, but we also see the connection between current unmanageability and my addict, right? My buddy, crack. My buddy Crack's trying to find other ways to get into my life. He can't just use a mental obsession anymore, so he has to show up in money, he has to show up in women, he has to show up in judgment, he has to show up in the desire to control everything. That's how he shows up now. I'm a guy that needs to really attack this like I attack crack, so I got to hang out with people that attack recovery like they attack their drugs of no choice. So, when I hang out and build a fellowship that I crave like that, the roots that I have in recovery are going to sink deep into the ground. And when the winds of life begin to blow, they're not going to yank me out. The winds will at my foundation and my roots will be strong. But that's a combination of the recovery and the unity. So unity is not just a home group and group conscience, but it's getting a group of men around you that know about the darkness that you walk with. Every single person in here right now has got darkness inside of them. I promise. It's part of the human condition. You guys watch Dexter? Yeah, remember the dark passenger? We all have it. But who, you know, once you can compare notes about how we all live in darkness and how we move through it, and how it actually is a catalyst for spiritual growth, it changes the game. So you got recovery, the mind, unity, the body. But I'm telling you to go deep. Not just showing up and going to a meeting. And like, I would suggest do what my sponsors taught me to do. You don't show up 5 minutes before a meeting starts and then out the door right after the Lord's Prayer. You know, I had my home group last night. I got there an hour and 15 minutes before the meeting started. I had several cool conversations before the meeting. We went to the meeting, and then I hung out at the church for 30 minutes after the meeting was over, and then we all went out to dinner. So going to my home group is not like an hour affair. It was literally a 4-hour affair last night. And that happens every Thursday night and a lot of Mondays.
Who in here thinks that sounds like a little much? 4 hours for a meeting?
Hey man,
how much time did you guys spend over the course of one day either looking for it, getting it, using it, or recovering from it? If you're anything like me, let's see, we would hit the snooze 14 times, finally get out of bed, drink a whole pot of coffee, so pretty much right out of the gate I'm recovering from it, right? And then I'm struggling to get through the shower and all that stuff because it's on me and it's ugh. Get to work, probably somewhere, you know, drinking another pot of coffee, trying to fire the computer up, clear the head, can't do it. Somewhere 9:30, 10 o'clock, head clears. Oh, okay, we can get some work done. So I'm going to work from 10, and then around 11, gut rot starts. Ugh, I need to get to lunch. Got to fix this stuff that's going on. So I work from 10 to 11. Then, let's see, probably start walking around the office around 11:30 trying to see who wants to go to lunch. And we go to lunch. Lunch is starting to make me feel pretty good because now, like, the gut rot's not going on from all the drinking I was doing the night before. So, you know, get back to the office, recover a little bit from that, kind of a little bit tired, but then I might get some production again. Around 3:30-ish. Man, this time is not moving. I got to get home, man. I got to get started again, right? About 4:30, I start packing stuff up. Spent the last hour thinking about, you know, just getting home, hanging out in the cul-de-sac with the kids, popping a couple beers. Get in the car, traffic, shit. Better get some tall boys for the way home, right? So then I'm driving home, drinking some, pull in the garage. Know that she's going to ask me, so I go to the fridge real quick, pop open another beer because I don't want her thinking I was drinking on the way home. Walk in the house, take a sip, and she goes, "Have you been drinking?" I'm like, "Yeah, I just opened it." And then drink until, I don't know, put the kids to bed, keep going, probably shut it down, maybe 11, maybe 2, maybe 3 in the morning. Well, it sounds like I gave my employer about 2 hours worth of work and pretty much spent the rest of the day thinking about it, getting it, using it, or recovering from it. So does 4 hours really seem like that big of a deal when I just described basically at least 12 hours that I spent every day focused on alcohol? Maybe not.
So, unity. Hopefully you look at it a little bit different. It's not just going to meetings, it's not just fellowship. So how do we feed our spirit? We become of service. Now, there are a lot of people that believe that setting up a meeting and holding service positions and making coffee and picking up cigarette butts are service work. And I believe they are. But I think it's service work that keeps our fellowships united, falling under unity. The service work that I stress with my guys that I sponsor is work and self-sacrifice for others. That means I set aside a lot of time to do one-on-one work, step work. And I work in this industry. I run a program. I'm sponsoring 5 guys right now actively through the 12 steps. I don't typically sponsor that many. It just worked out that way right now. And it is a lot of work. And it is self-sacrifice. And it is the bright spot in my life. But that's how I feed my spirit. When I take a guy through the 12 steps and I watch those lights come on, I watch those eyes come back to life, I've just now witnessed the regenerative power of God. That is more addictive than any crack rock I ever hit. It's a miracle that you do not want to miss. I've got a young man that I've sponsored for about 6 years. And I'm flying out to New Mexico on Wednesday to go spend 5 days with him and his wife and his two kids. I used to take a big book study and a speaker meeting to a treatment center on Monday nights. I still remember like it was tonight when he walked up to me after one of these meetings I did at the treatment center and asked me for help. The young man I'm going to go visit on Wednesday resembles the man that I met 6 years ago very little. Every time I lay eyes on this young man, I am reminded of the power of God and the regenerative aspects of that power. This young man went from being a front desk person at LA Fitness. He's the CEO of a treatment center in Santa Fe, New Mexico now. In less than 6 years. Now, him going from LA Fitness to the treatment center, it's the material world. It's a byproduct of the spiritual path for many people. What blows my mind is the man I met 6 years ago doesn't exist anymore. And when I look at him today, my awareness is drawn to God. The transformative power of God. And I got to do that because I was active in service work. I was active in carrying the message. So that's how you locate yourself, using the circle and the triangle. So if you are recently back from a relapse, or you have continuously failed at recovery, ask yourself how much action you poured into these three things. Recovery, the first 11 steps. How many amends did you make? What did the 10th step look like? Did you have an accountability network? Were you practicing daily prayer and meditation? How much time were you spending in prayer and meditation? Were you sponsoring people? Did you have a home group? Did you go to group conscience on a regular basis? You'll start to see what you weren't doing and what mistakes were being made.
We often hear people when they come back from a relapse say, or they come to a place like this and they hear that two guys are bringing a big book meeting in. The steps don't work. People say that all the time. I hear it all the time. The steps don't work. Tara gets to hear it from counselors. Well, the 12-step program really doesn't work. And when you ask a person, well, are you sure? And the counselors always tell them, well, yeah, I've talked to people that have gone through the steps and they say it didn't work. So we're going to believe a bunch of alcoholics and addicts that say that they actually worked the steps, right? But has anybody stopped and asked them, explain to me how you worked the steps? How many people were you sponsoring? None. Well, I made myself available. Or maybe one. Okay, so not 12. Are you praying and meditating every day? No. Evening review? No. Okay, so you're not doing 11. Calling people on a regular basis? Watching your thoughts? Watching your actions? Asking God to remove them? Turning to someone you can help? You doing all that? I have no idea what you're talking about. Okay, so you're not doing 10. You made all your amends. I made some of them. Okay. Did you do a fifth step? Yeah. Okay. Did you do resentments, fear, and sex inventory? I did resentments. Okay, so you didn't really do four. So as you start to really dissect it, you see that the people that are back from a relapse that say the steps didn't work. The step. Kind of a little different.
That's your roadmap, guys. That is your guiding light. So when I sit down with these men that I sponsor, I ask them to locate themselves. So if they're feeling squirrely or they've got the bedevilments bearing down on them on page 52, or they're unhappy or they're bored, we look at their circle and triangle. Let's see where you're at. Because if you get active in all three of these areas, it will solve three major problems for addicts and alcoholics. The lack of proportion and the ability to think straight, the sense of separation. You walk into a meeting, you feel like you don't belong there. You're standing on the outside looking in. You're not in the middle of the herd, so the wolf, your buddy, crack, meth, heroin, alcohol, whatever it is, your buddy has a name, your buddy's hanging out. He's waiting for you to just stumble out to the periphery so he can pick you off. Okay? If you have the unity, you'll feel a sense of belonging. You'll be like, this is home. Doesn't matter what meeting you walk into, you will feel at home. You'll be looking for your people. Some meetings you won't find your people, but it doesn't mean you're going to feel like you're out of place. So it solves the problem of a sense of separation, which is, our rooms are riddled with this problem. And then, I don't know how many of you got high behind this excuse. I'm bored. My life has no meaning. I don't have a sense of purpose. What's the use anyhow? I promise you, if you get active in sponsoring men through the 12 steps, you will have a sense of purpose. Your life will take on new meaning, and you will never get bored because it's exciting. But see, I can sit up here and describe it all weekend long, which I'm going to do. But you know, you're not going to fully understand the experience unless you have it yourself. I can sit up here and eat an orange. I can peel the orange. I can smell it. I can tell you what it smells like. I can tell you what the texture is like. I can tell you what it tastes like. I can tell you what it smells like.
Oh, how juicy is it? Oh,
But you're not going to know anything about this orange unless you take the orange and do the same thing. And that's what we're talking about here. Any questions on the circle and triangle? It's a very important, used to be on our title page. Okay, title page also says this is a story of many thousands of men and women who have recovered. What do we recover from? Let's turn to page XIII. XIII, forward to the first edition. Four lines down. To show other addicts and alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. So Brandon and I are going to sound like we're telling you what to do, but we're really not. What we're doing is sharing with you what we do. We show. You have a decision to make. You stand at a turning point. You're at a departure point. Don't reinvent the wheel. If you find someone that has excellence in their life and has something that you want, ask them what they do and do it. That's it. I tell that to all the guys I sponsor. If you want what I have, do what I do. If you don't, no sweat off my back. I'll see you around. I will not work with a man who is unwilling to work with me. That's the way I was brought up. What do we recover from? Earlier, one of the myths we talked about is recovered versus recovering. I'm as recovered as I'm ever going to be in terms of the mental obsession and the physical craving. Now, if people that introduce themselves as recovering addicts and alcoholics would only follow that up by saying, I'm always going to be recovering from the internal condition, the spiritual malady. It demands ongoing treatment. But I'll tell you guys that I haven't had an obsession to smoke crack or do Oxycontin or drink whiskey in almost 10 years. I've recovered from the mental aspect of addiction and alcoholism. I haven't put any drugs. I've had surgery 5 times, so I've put mind-altering substances in my body as prescription because of the surgeries, and I had a kidney stone. Outside of that, I haven't put any drugs in my body or any alcohol. Now, I've drank on accident, like picking up a drink I didn't know was alcohol, and I took a swig. I didn't turn into a werewolf. It was a full moon, too. So I've recovered from the seemingly helpless state of mind and body. There's a reason it doesn't say mind, body, and spirit. And it's so much more attractive to a new person to hear someone say, I've recovered. That means there's hope. That means I don't always have to be sick. That means today if I lie, cheat, or steal, it's not I can't hide behind my addiction or my alcoholism. Oh, poor me, I'm an addict. That's what I do. I cheat, I steal, I cuss people. Oh, that's crap. That's just an excuse to not own responsibility for your life. I've recovered from addiction. I've recovered from alcoholism. Now it's like tearing my ACL. If I tear my ACL, I can reach a recovered state with my ACL. I got to make the muscles around it stronger, right? Or I can tear the ACL again. Same thing with my spiritual condition, and I can fall out of being in a recovered state. Recovered does not mean cured. It's a false humility or false modesty to go through these steps, be placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected, and say, I'm still recovering. I've recovered from the hopeless state of mind and body.
On page 20, it says, doubtless, you are curious to discover the how and the why in the face of expert opinion to the contrary. Expert opinion to the contrary can mean the people within the rooms of AA and CA. In the face of expert opinion to the contrary, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. This is an important line from the standpoint of you will hear all sorts of things in meetings. It's in the first paragraph. You may have already asked yourself why it is that all of us so became so very ill from drinking. It's in that paragraph. You will hear all sorts of things talked about in meetings that are not true, that are said from people that are well-meaning but completely full of shit. They heard it from somebody else, sounded good, they repeated it. I'm always going to be recovering because it sounds humble. Ask them where they got that from. Because the book says it 17 times, recovered. It says recovering once when it's talking about dad or in the family afterward where he's just starting. Okay? So that, and if you turn to page 64, we'll touch on it again later. It says, though our decision was a vital and crucial step, this is around the fourth step, it could have little permanent effect. Okay? So, we're not going to be sick forever. If you don't hear anything out of Tarek and I this weekend, hear this. The way that you've been living your life, you don't have to live that way anymore. You can live your life in a way that is not a constant struggle.
With drugs and alcohol.
Yes. There are other things that you may struggle with.
So,
but you will do them from a sober state or a clean state.
So let's go to the bottom of that paragraph on forward to the first edition, guys. So this is something else I point out to guys I sponsor. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. It doesn't say my way to quit smoking crack. It doesn't say my way to quit shooting dope or meth. It doesn't say my way to quit drinking vodka or whiskey. It says my way of living. Now, one reason I think it says advantages for all is because when you and I are clean and sober, the universe benefits. The universe is a better place that we're all clean and sober tonight. All right. I don't know if you guys understand that, but it's a very true statement.
If we all got up out of here and started doing whatever we did, how much worse is the little city of Chauncey going to be tonight? I mean, it's going to be hellacious, right? So it has its advantages for everybody in Chauncey for us to be here doing this tonight versus what we used to do.
This is not our way to quit using and quit drinking, guys. This is a way of living that produces a state that's conducive to permanent sobriety and permanently being clean. Not one day at a time. It's a specific, clear-cut path to follow to achieve this. So let's turn to the forward to the second edition, page XV. So, I'm going to tell you guys a little story. Well, let me ask a question first. What step do you think the 12 steps were founded on? What step gave birth to the 12-step movement? I used to think it was 12. Okay. So here's the story. Everybody know the story of Bill Wilson being in Akron at the Mayflower Hotel? You guys have heard of it? It's the day before Mother's Day, 1935. Bill's business venture has collapsed. He's got $10 in his pocket. He's pacing around the lobby at the hotel. He hears all the people in the bar having fun, and he can hear the glasses. He can hear the ice being poured into the glasses and the glasses clanging. And he's wondering if he's going to drink, and he gets this idea that he has to talk to another drunk in order to save himself. And so he goes through the church directory. He goes through several people that he calls. He ends up getting in touch with this lady named Henrietta Cyberling, and she knows a guy in her congregation at the Oxford Group that's a really bad drunk, and she tries to connect them. He was nursing a hangover on Saturday. She said, come to my gatehouse on Sunday. So Bill shows up to meet with Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob's wife brings him. As they walk into Henrietta's house, Dr. Bob says to his wife, this guy's here to talk to me about my drinking. People have been talking to me about my drinking my entire life. He's got 15 minutes. You come in there and get me. They sat down and they talked for 4 or 5 hours. It was the first time anyone had sat down with Dr. Bob and talked about their drinking. Bill was there to talk about his drinking. He wasn't there to talk to Dr. Bob about Dr. Bob's drinking. But as he talked about his own drinking, he described the hopeless condition of alcoholism, the physical craving, and the mental obsession. And for the first time, Dr. Bob understood what the problem was. He knew what the answer was. He'd been in the Oxford Group getting dunked and doing all the spiritual remedies, and he wasn't able to stay sober. And he even had the 6 steps that the Oxford Group has. But he didn't understand what the hell was wrong with him. And that's what Bill Wilson brought to the table. And Bill moved in with Bob. And they talked about spiritual matters night and day. About 2 weeks into it, Bob says to Bill, you can't live with me for the rest of my life. We got to see if this thing works. You know, I'll do all the steps, all 6 of these steps. But there's this one step called restitution to those harmed. Bob said, I'm not willing to do that. My reputation in Akron is hanging on by a thread. And you want me to go clean up all this damage I've created? I could ruin my medical practice. I'm just not willing to do that. So he goes off to Atlantic City for a medical convention, and he's drunk on the way to Atlantic City.
Doesn't even make it to his destination.
Doesn't make it. He comes back to Akron. He's at his office manager's house. Bill and Ann's Dr. Bob's wife, go pick up Bob. He's got surgery on Tuesday. This is sometime on the weekend. And they have to nurse him back to health. They give him some alcohol and some barbiturates to taper off with. And Bob wakes up on Tuesday, and he's going to go to the hospital, and he turns to Bill, and he says, Bill, I'm going through with it all. And Bill thought nothing of it. Bill thought he was talking about the surgery. So Bob goes to the hospital. Afternoon comes, no Dr. Bob. Early evening comes, no Dr. Bob. Late evening comes, no Dr. Bob. Around 11 or midnight that night, Bob strolls in. Ann and Bill were convinced that Dr. Bob was drunk. But he wasn't drunk when he walked in the door. They said, Bob, where you been at? Bob says, I've been driving around town all day setting up all my amends. So you and I sit here tonight not because of the 12th step, because of the 8th step. Dr. Bob became willing to make all his amends. I don't know if we'd be here if he had not completed. Now, it wasn't the 8th step when Bob completed it, but that's what he did. He became willing to make all his amends. And that's why we're sitting here tonight. So let's read on the bottom of XVI. It says, this physician, Dr. Bob, had repeatedly tried spiritual means to solve his alcoholic dilemma, but had failed. But when the broker gave him Dr. Silkworth's description of alcoholism, the physical craving and the mental obsession, and its hopelessness, the physician, Bob, began to pursue the spiritual remedy for his malady with a willingness he'd never before been able to muster. He sobered, never to drink again, up to the moment of his death in 1950. And this is the part I want to emphasize. This seemed to prove that one addict can affect another as no non-addict can. This proved that one alcoholic can affect another as no non-alcoholic can. It also indicates that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, one addict with another, is vital for permanent recovery. Not, it didn't say one day at a time, did it? No, it says permanent. You guys get the difference between one day at a time and permanent. And it also says right there that the work in Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous and Heroin Anonymous is taking other people through the steps. So if you actually get a sponsor or work the steps while you're here, you're not even doing the real work. The real work is when you work with others and you sacrifice your personal time to help them work the 12 steps. That's the real work. And you will have permanent recovery and you will grow spiritually more when you watch someone else grow spiritually. I don't know why, it's a spiritual law. Now, when I work the steps, yes, my capacity to be a hollow bone increases. My capacity to be an effective sponsor increases. My level of awareness and state of consciousness, it increases. All of that is done for one reason in my world, to be an effective sponsor. That's what this deal's about. We're going to drive this home all weekend. If you want to get clean, die clean, or get clean, live clean, and die clean, get sober, stay sober, and die sober, and you fit the description of the alcoholic or the addict in the big book, you will have to do this thing called sponsorship. And you will have to do it for the rest of your life. Now, not everyone can be an effective sponsor, but there are still ways of carrying the message that will help you be effective in helping others. But I believe everyone that fits the description in the big book has to do this work on some level to carry this message to those that are still suffering. This is what the 12 steps are about. This is what the 12 traditions are about, and this is what the 12 concepts of service are about. They all culminate in one focal point, which is carrying the message to the alcoholic and the drug addict that still suffers. This is why we're here.
Sounds like an awful lot, Tarek. I just want to stop smoking crack.
I think I said that for 3 years. I was in and out for 3 years picking up white chips.
You know what's really awesome is the guy that he referenced that he's going out to see in Santa Fe. The first time this guy saw Tarek speak in a meeting, and he'll actually share this in a meeting. He's like, I heard this redheaded guy up at the front of the podium talking, and I thought he was a little much. And our friend then went and spent 40, 50 grand to go out to some fancy place out in California that was going to give him massages and baths and all sorts of stuff that were going to get him sober. That didn't work. And then he went to some other places. That didn't work. And then he finally got to the point where he's like, you know, I should probably try to go find that guy that I thought was a little much. And he did. And then he did what he did. And now Tarek gets to go see him running a treatment center, being the CEO of it out in Santa Fe. So, maybe Tarek is a little much. But when you get to the point where you've tried everything else and it hasn't worked, come see us. We got a way that works. Mm-hmm. Now, you may be sitting there thinking,
well, let's start the next session.
Okay.
Let's take a 15-minute break. All right.